Much of the history of Africa today is written by outsiders. A narrative that simply looks at Africa as the victim of the world. And the starting point always has to be crisis, victim, disease. Africa will only succeed if we Africans liberate ourselves. It's us, nobody else.
That's Clapperton Chakanutsa Mavunga. He grew up in rural Zimbabwe, where he learned to track antelope with traditional hunters. Today, he's a professor at MIT's program in Science, Technology, and Society, where he's challenging the idea that technology can only come from the Western world. He told Steve Paulson that he still considers himself a hunter, though he does it now with his computer.
The key issue for me is, how do you define technology? And for me, it boils down to a very simple thing. It's the means and ways that people deploy towards certain ends.
Well, and I think in the Western sense, I think we often assume that technology comes out of science, it comes out of engineering, comes out of book learning.
Exactly.
You're sort of giving us a different picture of technology.
And if you look at ancient Rome, technology didn't exactly come from the books either. It was a lot of doing that was going on.
You have studied various sort of traditional ways of knowledge making in Africa. One is the hunt, particularly in the area where you grew up in Zimbabwe.
Right. And the hunt is actually several things. The hunt is first and foremost an educational space. It's why I call it a professoriate of the hunt. It's a place where boys were educated in the arts, not only of killing an animal, but actually reading signs, tracking.
So there's this kind of a whole apprentice system.
It's a whole
boys
kind of
learn from their elders.
Part of what is going on in my mind is that we often look at these African modes of practice as a kind of the face of the primitive. What I wanted to show with the hunt is that you can use that as an entry point into the forest and into a kind of African mode of forestry. The forest not only is a site where trees and animals are found, but a whole relationship which is deeply spiritualized between people and other creations.
Spiritualized in what way?
For example, the hunters that I talked about, the only way you could enter a forest and prosper was to be a beast of the forest, to transform yourself into a beast of the forest through the proper rituals.
What kinds of rituals?
You brew beer. You invite the ancestral spirits to come and bless the occasion. And that's how you transformed and acquired the spirit of the forest. You went into a forest as a hunter. Animals like wild dogs, like the lion, are hunters. So you went in there like one of them. And you hunted. But as you exited into humanity, and you were supposed, also by proper ritual, to revert back to your humanity. And so you had to be cleansed back so that the spirits of the forest don't accompany you. After all, the idea was that the forest is full of very bad spirits.
Have you gone on any of these hunts that you've just been describing?
Yes, I have accompanied some, but don't forget that when I was growing up, we were hunters. I apprenticed with my brothers. On occasion, we would catch an antelope. The bigger antelopes, like the kudu, would come calling. But we never killed it, of course, because it was my mother's totem. And you don't eat or harm your totem, otherwise you lose your front teeth or all your teeth.
So there's a whole ethic of which animals you can kill and which you should let be.
Absolutely. The concept of game reserves and national parks is not new to Africans. It long predated the colonial period. The king or chief promulgated what were called closed and open hunting seasons. In summer, when the animals were dropping their fawn and breeding, that was a closed season. You would not hunt. You would suffer very grave consequences. And those consequences were mired in taboo. The consequence was that you brought wrath on not just yourself or your family, but the whole nation.
It sounds like there was sort of an ecological understanding built into these taboos.
Absolutely. And also, when you were hunting, there was an ethic of how you would kill animals and what kind of animals you would kill. For example, you would not kill an animal that is like a female elephant that has got its young. That was simply considered a no-no.
What I find so fascinating about what you're saying is, I mean, we tend to think of sort of modern notions of conservation as, you know, there are national parks, there are game preserves and all of that. You're saying these kinds of systems have been long in place in Africa.
If I may say, part of what tickled my imagination was the extent to which the idea of game reserving in Zimbabwe in particular was not anything new. If anything, it was simply plagiarizing ideas of Africans. You know, what these hunters had learned during their hunt.
Now, going back to your own personal experiences as a boy, you know, with your brother going out hunting, did you go through these kinds of rituals that you've been describing? I mean, sort of, the, you know, becoming the beast who goes into the forest?
Yes, we did. It's the full repertoire. I still recall, and even today, that you do not carry salt when you are going into the forest. You are anticipating and taking the ancestral spirits for granted, or the spirits of providence for granted. Who told you that you are going to catch anything? Teaches you to be humble. Don't claim any easy victories. Do not claim to be the hunter per se. You are made a hunter by this whole system of spirituality, taboo, and your ability to preserve custom. And they are rewarded for that by being ethical in the forest. But think of it this way. I see myself as a latter-day hunter. The only difference is the what kind of prey I hunt. But the philosophy is the same. My generation, we tend to hunt more long distance.
Do you want to explain what you mean?
But hunters are all the same. Perhaps you can think with me through this. I'm trying to think of the idea of the knowledge economy being something that's not entirely new. With my generation, we no longer fight with spears or guns. We fight with the pen and the computer.
Well, you are now a professor at MIT. Are you still a hunter in some ways?
The process of hunting continues. I'm still engaged in a process of rehumanization. Consider that there used to be a time when I was not even considered human. Such was the very eugenic start of the colonial period and before then slavery. I call it remembering dismembered knowledges. So in a sense, I may be a professor, yes, but what do I have to show? The people that I write for and about are not the elite that read books. They are people that still are caught in this a very traumatizing colonial experience where they were. It was hammered into them that they are nothing without the white man. And that's a very, very difficult place to start. It makes the duty of the African academic anything but ivory tower. It's an unaffordable luxury. And so one of the ways that I'm choosing to engage in that hunt is to hunt in the African past for a past that's inspiring. I want, for example, an African who's an engineering student to have a text that they can read and feel inspired by from their own past. I do not want them to have to use Albert Einstein as a point of reference for the scientific or the technological. I want them to point to their own past.
So even though you are now living in the United States, teaching in the United States, you see your audience, I mean, the people who will read your scholarship as mainly Africans?
Not necessarily just the audience. It's my priority. I have no problem with anyone reading what I write. This is why I'm now actively seeking to translate my books into local languages. Because in writing in English, I'm also killing my own language. That's the double bind we find ourselves in. It's good to get tenure. It's nice. I love it. I think part of the process was to show that I can succeed as an African. I can go to other parts of the world and still be able to distinguish myself. You know, to be honest, that's still a very hollow victory. The priority is to think about African, particularly children, that are growing up without their own kind of hero, a hero they can see. But nothing beats having to go back as a manifestation of the possible, a manifestation of the successful hunter coming back.
That's Clapperton Mavunga talking with Steve Paulson. He's a professor at MIT's program in Science, Technology, and Society, and he goes back to Africa every summer to teach at universities in Mozambique and South Africa.